You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko Jessica Toku Ingoa. No mai hari mai ki te Wire. Mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rahina Monday. I'm your host, Jessica, and I'll be with you for the next hour. E whai ake nei, coming up on the show, we have our two weekly political catch-ups with Te Pāti Māori's Takutai Kemp and ex-Simon Court. During these interviews, we discuss with both about the recent support for Ukraine announced by the government, as well as the Prime Ministers of New Zealand, Australia and Canada issuing a statement urging Israel against a military operation in Rafah. I also speak to Takutai Kemp about the government's decision to increase benefit sanctions. I speak to National Chair of Palestinian Solidarity Network Aotearoa, John Minto, about concerns regarding Israeli propaganda and its influence here in Aotearoa. And lastly, I speak to Wellington peace activist Valerie Morse about Auckland War Memorial Museum's move to a Te Tiriti-centric approach. He aha o whakaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of our pieces today, so get in touch, tuku pātuhi mai, text in on 5395 or waia mai rāne. Give us a call in the studio on 309-3879. Ka oa e wariwari, e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki eni, kōrero, anō he paki heri roki roki mā ranga e te pai. Tuku tuku o irarangi pōho, mi haere ki 95BFM irakati.com, and you can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
It's time for our weekly chat with Te Pāti Māori's Takutai Kemp.
For our weekly catch-up, I started off by speaking to Te Pāti Māori's Takutai Kemp about the recent passing of Ofiso Collins last week. We also discussed the government increasing benefit sanctions, as well as the rate that benefits increase year on year. And we discussed the government announcing new support for Ukraine, as well as the Prime Ministers of New Zealand, Canada and Australia issuing a statement calling for Israel to not pursue a military operation in Rafah in southern Gaza. Here is that interview. First of all, I just want to acknowledge the passing of Ofiso Collins. Do you have a message on behalf of your party about this tragedy?
Oh, it's such a sad and devastating day when we lost Ofiso. Fesor was such a great man. In Parliament, he had a beautiful smile. He was always kind, caring, calm. And a great man of wisdom. He had a love for his family, his wife and children. And he loved his community and the mahi that he did. And on behalf of Te Pāti Māori, you know, our love and aroha goes out to his wife and his children, his whānau. And we know that this is such a sad loss for our community, for all of Aotearoa, but such a sad and devastating loss to all of us.
Yeah, and to move on, last week the government announced new support for Ukraine. What is Te Pāti Māori's view on this?
Well, Te Pāti Māori have always have said that we are military-free. We, we don't support war. You know, we don't support war. We need to be able to stand by Indigenous people. We don't believe that, you know, money needs to be sent overseas to support these wars, because there are war and there are issues here in our own country that need financial backing and support. For instance, you know, here in Aotearoa, there's a war on poverty, There's a war on benefit sanctions. We need to find ways to put more financial backing into supporting our own people, especially those who've got a cost of living crisis. There are other things that we can be doing here in Aotearoa. War is not the answer. We must be looking at finding ways to find peace alongside these Indigenous people.
So speaking of those benefit sanctions, we saw last week that the government announced that they would be pursuing that, as well as decreasing the amount benefits increase year on year. What is your reaction to this, and how do you think it will impact poverty here in Aotearoa?
There will be a huge impact on poverty here in Aotearoa. It will affect those whānau that are already in poverty. You know, poverty doesn't go away overnight. And when there are benefit sanctions applied to whānau in poverty, it'll just make things worse. You know, in my experience of working in the community for many years in South Auckland, it is our whānau in these communities that will suffer the most. It will actually impact mokopuna, tamariki. They will feel the brunt of it. You know, Māori are the first in the line at MSC, the last to leave. They will feel the brunt of these benefit sanctions.
The government has said that the Social Development Ministry will begin work check-ins for those who have been on a benefit for at least 6 months. Do you see any benefit in how people who are looking for jobs could connect with people in their community to help them seek employment?
Well, those programs have been in place for many years. There are lots of community organisations that are already in place to help people back into employment. What needs to happen is that more devolvement of funding needs to go out to these communities so that they can raise awareness even more. And it's actually going to be the community providers, such as whānau water providers, those that are part of the paihiringa or tamaki here in Tamaki Makaurau, that will actually feel the brunt, because it'll be whānau who get turned away from MSD. They'll end back up in the front line of these providers, and they will have to be able to support these whānau back into employment. It's not that easy around just putting sanctions in place, and then who's responsible for that? MSD won't be able to. It'll fall back onto providers in the community.
You brought up standing up for Indigenous people, and we're seeing that overseas, Israel has begun a ground invasion of Rafah in southern Gaza. And we saw that the Prime Ministers of New Zealand, Australia and Canada issue a joint statement calling on Israel to stop this military operation in Rafah. What is Te Pāti Māori's stance on this?
Te Pāti Māori's stance has always been the same from the beginning, that there should be no war, that we called for a ceasefire right from the beginning, and we continue to call for a ceasefire. We've called for the removal of the Israel ambassador here and the USA ambassador here in Aotearoa. Again, it is the mokopuna of those countries, of Palestinian mokopuna, that are suffering. People are dying, and we must push and encourage a ceasefire.
That was Te Pāti Māori's Takuta Kemp on their concerns surrounding benefit sanctions introduced by the existing government and the government's response to the wars in Ukraine and Gaza.
That was our weekly chat with Te Pāti Māori's Takuta Kemp.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
For our weekly interview, I also spoke to ex-Simon Court about his party's stance on our government's response to the mass death of Ukrainian and Palestinian civilians and how the government has responded to these events here in Aotearoa. We started off the interview acknowledging the passing of Fa'anana Afeso Collins. First of all, I wanted to acknowledge that last week we saw Afeso Collins tragically passed away. What is your message on behalf of your party in regards to this?
Well, we will have an opportunity to express our condolences about the loss of Professor Collins in Parliament. The Speaker has said he will make time for that. Personally, I really liked Defeso. I'd only just got to know him. We shared a background of both working in local government, and just a few weeks ago we attended an event and then decided that we had so much we wanted to keep talking about, we'd share a taxi back to Parliament. He was somebody who was going to bring his own personal experiences from his community, his time in local government, and his passion for people having better lives, and I'm really sorry that he won't get to fulfil that mission, but also very sad for his family and friends who will be missing a dad, a husband, and we wish them all the best.
To move on to last week, the government announced new support for Ukraine. Can you tell our listeners about this?
Well, New Zealand benefits from what we call a rules-based international order. In short, you don't get to invade a sovereign democratic neighbour, no matter how big and tough you think you are or you know what your excuses might be going back in history. ACT is proud to be part of a government that stands with the people of Ukraine against the belligerence of a larger, authoritarian, dictatorial neighbour. And the extension of the Defence Force deployment is an expression of good faith in the hard-working Kiwis who are currently training Ukrainian soldiers and providing those logistics and intelligence support, which is something New Zealand does really well. Now, in addition to that, last week, David Seymour and Brooke Van Velden hosted a fundraising effort, a private fundraising effort, something they've done every year since Russia invaded Ukraine around the anniversary of that awful day. And they raised money to help fund equipment such as drones for the Ukrainian Defence Force, which are things that, you know, no matter how much money and equipment other countries are giving, the Ukrainian people will tell you every little bit counts. So the stuff the government's doing and then the stuff that the ACT Party are doing as individuals to try to help as well.
We've seen that Russia's invasion of Ukraine has not only had a significant human cost, but has also impacted regional and global stability. What are your concerns moving forward? What would you like to see happen in regards to the government's next steps to address this?
Well, you're absolutely right. Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which was well signalled with a massive military build-up and repeated threats going back some years. In fact, going back to 2014 when they invaded Crimea and took over some parts of Luhansk and Donetsk province in the eastern part of Ukraine. What it's done is destabilised the sense that our collective security based on agreements, you know, like the ASEAN agreement, Southeast Asian nations, or NATO, is enough, that the deterrence is enough to deter bad actors. And so I think that's cause now for New Zealand, like its defence partners, UK, USA, Canada and Australia, to think about what do we need to invest in so that we have a credible defence force that is a deterrent against bad actors in our region as well as in other parts of the world, and makes countries that think twice before they invade a neighbour or do something that interferes with international shipping lanes, for example, or threatens a minority group in their country. So I think much has changed and there is much for New Zealand to consider. The ACT campaigned on a policy to increase GDP or defence spending as a proportion of GDP to 2%, which is the NATO standard. Many NATO countries are struggling to achieve that and New Zealand will as well. But we would certainly be advocating for our defence forces to be made robust, resilient, have excellent training, have good accommodation for the personnel where they're housed around the country, and that our equipment is fit for purpose.
Another international event that we've seen have a significant human cost as well as a global impact is Israel's aggressive action in Gaza. And we've seen last week that the Prime Ministers of New Zealand, Australia and Canada issued a joint statement urging Israel against a military operation in Rafah. What is your position on this?
Well, New Zealand, like Australia and Canada, has grave concerns about the possibility of military assaults on Rafah. There's 1.5 million civilians taking refuge in that area. Israel has said it's going to happen. But there are steps that Hamas, the combatants who took over 200 Israelis hostage and killed essentially 1,500, the steps that Hamas can take to prevent it. They need to release the hostages they took on October 7, and there needs to be a genuine and enduring ceasefire. But that can't be a one-sided ceasefire. Hamas has to lay down its arms and release the hostages. Ultimately, a negotiated political solution is needed to achieve lasting peace and security. Australia, New Zealand, Canada, we remain steadfast in our commitment to a two-state solution, including in the long term, the creation of a Palestinian state alongside Israel, where Palestinians and Israelis get to live side by side in peace, security and dignity. But for in order for that to happen, Hamas, a terrorist entity which is which intends to destroy Israel and eliminate the Jewish people from that country, they must lay down their arms, they must surrender or be defeated, and the hostages must be freed.
Hamas has offered a ceasefire which would see a captive swap between Israel and Palestine, which would allow Israeli hostages to be freed as well as those Palestinians that are being held captive in Israel to be released also. Is this something that ACT would support?
This is a terrible dilemma for the Israeli government and the Israeli people. The hostages are innocent. They were captured at gunpoint, dragged, some of them half naked, having been abused into Gaza by Hamas. The people that Hamas insists are released, hundreds and hundreds of them are terrorists who have killed often multiple people. And it would be a big challenge for any country to say, hey, yeah, we don't mind releasing all of these terrorists, people convicted of heinous crimes, just to get our innocent hostages back. So look, this is a dilemma for the Israeli people and the Israeli government. We need to support the Israeli government to get its people back. We also need to be using whatever influence we can to seek a long-lasting and enduring peace between Israel and the Palestinian people.
The death toll in Gaza is approaching 30,000. That's a significant human cost that we can't ignore. Are you confident that our government has done enough to stand for the people of Palestine as it has for the people of Ukraine?
Well, it's awful when people are caught up in a conflict that they didn't choose to be a part of. That responsibility for the deaths in Gaza lies squarely with Hamas. If you think about other sovereign nations like Israel, like Ukraine, they have no choice but to defend themselves from the type of aggression we've seen coming from Russia or coming from Hamas, that Palestinian faction that runs Gaza. So it's awful that civilians are caught in the crossfire. My expectation, the expectation of the New Zealand government and the expectation of the International Criminal Court, is that Israel takes all measures to avoid any incidents which could be considered a violation of the international laws of war, and that civilians are protected as far as practical. But we also must be aware that Hamas and other terrorist entities are hiding inside civilian population centres, under hospitals, under UN schools, and essentially using the entire population of Gaza as a human shield. That in itself is a war crime. So I think the New Zealand government should be advocating for a peaceful resolution as soon as possible, and that must include for the release of the hostages as soon as possible. And that's really the key to an enduring ceasefire.
I just want to clarify, so do you see Israel as not holding any responsibility for the deaths of Palestinians and the conditions that Palestinian civilians have been in, and you don't believe they have committed any war crimes, which the International Court of Justice has suggested that it is likely that Israel has?
That's not what I said at all. What I said, and I'm happy to repeat it, is that Israel must make sure that they follow the international laws and conventions of conducting war to minimise civilian casualties. Civilians are casualties in Gaza, and that is as a result of war. That war was started by Hamas, and Israel have said they're going to finish it one way or another. That's awful for the Palestinian civilians caught in the crossfire. And you're absolutely right. Thousands and thousands have been injured. If it was avoidable, I'm confident that the Israeli Defence Force would have avoided it. Unfortunately, civilian casualties are a result of armed conflict, and the responsibility for starting that armed conflict lies with Hamas. And also, the responsibility for ending it. If they put down their arms, release the hostages, and seek an enduring peace.
That was ex-Simon Court on their stance on what's happening in both Ukraine and in Gaza.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Electronic pioneers The Crystal Method are in New Zealand for one exclusive show, February 29th at the Power Station. This legendary act is guaranteed to bring barrels of dance floor bangers. The Crystal Method, live at the Power Station, February 29th. Get your tickets now from the Power Station or AAA Ticketing.
Is the lecture over?
Yeah, were you even listening?
No, I was thinking about suburban reptiles.
Yeah, my landlord sucks as well.
No, I mean one of New Zealand's first punk bands, started by a group of Auckland University students.
Sick. Have you been reading Audio Culture again?
Yeah.
Plunge into Aotearoa's musical history with Audio Culture, the number one repository of hard facts, tall tales, insider info, and lovingly researched editorial on NZ music.
Audioculture.co.nz.
The noisy library of New Zealand music.
Audio Culture.
Iwi Waiata.
Sorry, no goths.
Excuse me?
Yeah, piss off. Maybe without those sunnies you could read the bloody sign.
No goths? This is cruel and unusual.
Not as cruel and unusual as that beautiful velvet cape. Now get out of my sight, Nosferatu.
I'm a human being.
It's hard out there for a goth, but everyone's welcome on Penny's 1-4. A heady mix of the sounds of now and the shimmering hits from our alternative past. The 1-4 with Penny, every Monday only on 95 BFM.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. Concerns have been raised about the spread of fake news and propaganda to justify anti-Palestinian actions. I spoke to National Chair of Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa, John Minto, about why unfounded claims are being repeated and here in Aotearoa and globally.
I started off our interview by asking Minto what claims have been made and what validity they have.
Over the last 4 months, there have been four or five really key propaganda drives that Israel has made. And on analysis, all of those have fallen over and they've been exposed in media in other parts of the world. But they have not been exposed in the Western media and the media in New Zealand. And so politicians are taking those on board and assuming that these things are true and correct when they're not. So it goes right back to the first days of, you know, the absurd claims of beheaded babies, which has been repeated by Joe Biden and others numerous times. There is simply no evidence of that at all. In fact, the Israeli military have now come and said they've got no, they themselves have no evidence of it. And then there are the allegations of sexual assault, incredible allegations that were made. And again, a complete absence of any credible backup for those claims. At the same time, I might add that there have been credible claims by Palestinians of sexual attacks against Palestinian women and children during this war. And yet those claims have never been, even though they've been, they've had the support of the United Nations, which says that these are allegations which must be investigated, they've not been carried by the New Zealand media. So we're getting this one-sided narrative. And it goes through several other things, such as the claim that the United Nations Relief and Works Agency staff were involved in the attack on Israel on October 7 this year. And again, the dossier they prepared and released with great fanfare has just fallen apart under the smallest amount of scrutiny. And yet none of this has been reported by our New Zealand media. So we're continuing to see recycled these Israeli propaganda points, which are nothing more than lies used to justify the mass slaughter of Palestinians, which is taking place at the moment.
We've seen pro-Israeli advocates, including here in New Zealand, claim Hamas have committed horrific actions, including beheading babies, allegations of sexual assault against civilians, and we've seen the repeated claim of Palestinians being used as human shields. Where are these claims really coming from, and what merit do they have?
Well, they're coming from Israel, which is desperate to try and portray its attacks against Palestinians as somehow justified when they blatantly are not. So they're coming, you know, in war. I've got a T-shirt, you know, a T-shirt that says, "The first casualty of war is truth. The rest are mostly civilians." And this is precisely what we're seeing play out with the situation in Gaza. It's clear that there were war crimes committed in the attack on Israel on October the 7th. There were war crimes, and they should be investigated, and the people responsible should be held to account. The world has done that with the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. And while we can all understand why Russia invaded Ukraine, it doesn't justify what Russia did. And Russia's been held to account, and there's been, arrest warrants issued for Vladimir Putin, for example, and for others involved in crimes against Ukrainian civilians. But we haven't seen anything of that in the attacks which Israel has launched on Gaza, the genocidal attacks on Gaza. So we're seeing the Western world take a very, a principled stand in the case of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but an utterly unprincipled, racist response to what Israel has done in its attacks on Palestinians.
And you discussed the allegations of United Nations Relief and Works Agency members being involved in those October 7th attacks. And this has led to countries, including New Zealand, threatening to pull crucial funding. Could you discuss what this organisation does and why this funding is so crucial?
The United Nations Relief and Works Agency was formed in the late 1940s by the United Nations. And it was specifically for Palestinian refugees. Palestinian refugees are the largest group of refugees in the world, and they were ethnically cleansed from vast areas of Palestine by Israeli militias in between 1947 and 1949. So the United Nations set up the UNRWA to look after them in terms of health, in terms of education, in terms of basic needs. Food and water and what have you. What Israel has been trying to do for decades now has been to attack and delegitimize the UNRWA because Israel wants to attack the rights of Palestinian refugees to return to their land and their homes in Israel. They want to delegitimize Palestinian claims as refugees. And they put a huge amount of work into this because they want to weaken the Palestinians' case that they are refugees when, in fact, international law makes it absolutely plain that these people have a right to return to their land. New Zealand, along with most other countries of the world, have voted every year at the United Nations since 1949 for Palestinian refugees to be able to return to their land and their homes in areas which have been taken over by Israel. So it's really Israel trying to legitimize itself by denying Palestinian rights to be called refugees.
Why are we seeing politicians and media here in Aotearoa repeating unfounded claims?
Well, we're seeing them repeat unfounded claims because the Western media has, all the way through the last 4 months, has been amplifying Israeli claims at the expense of everything else. I mean, you look at the most appalling and shocking example, which was when the International Court of Justice released its findings, which were deeply damaging to Israel, saying that there was plausible evidence that Israel was committing genocide in Gaza. The Israel then, within a few hours, released a dossier which claimed that UNRWA was involved in attacks on October the 7th on Israel. The Western media, New Zealand media included, immediately highlighted these false Israeli claims and sidelined the International Court of Justice decision. So we have Israel deliberately manipulating the narrative and having a very eager Western media, and I'm including in that every media source in New Zealand, particularly our state broadcaster, Radio New Zealand, and our state television producer, Television New Zealand. They have followed the Israeli narrative at every turn at the expense of the truth and at the expense of stories which are so important for the future of humanity on the planet. We have to have international rules that every country follows, and we need to hold Israel to account. And that's the problem, is Israel has never, ever been held to account for 76 years of brutal occupation of Palestine, killing and maiming and destroying Palestinian infrastructure whenever it has the opportunity.
We saw last week that the Prime Ministers of New Zealand, Australia and Canada released a joint statement urging Israel to not pursue a ground invasion of Rafah. Do you think that this indicates that these governments are realising what is going on and are taking more steps to support Palestine?
Well, I think the reason they put that out, it would have been done in conjunction with the United States. The United States is now very worried that its own reputation has been incredibly badly tarnished by what Israel is doing, because the entire world knows that Joe Biden could stop this killing immediately with a phone call to Netanyahu and say, we will not send you weapons while you continue this genocide in Gaza. That would stop everything today. The whole world knows that. But instead, the US is continuing to arm Israel, is continuing to provide every opportunity for Israel to continue these genocidal attacks on Gaza. So the US's own reputation has been deeply, deeply damaged. And now the Western allies of the US are coming in and themselves putting pressure on Israel. Rather than have the US put the pressure on, they're putting pressure on Israel itself to try and get Netanyahu to stop this genocidal assault on Gaza. And so, again, we are doing the US's bidding. It's not because we oppose the US or we oppose what Israel's doing. We're doing it to help protect US interests around the world.
And that was John Minto, who is the National Chair for Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa, discussing concerns about anti-Palestinian propaganda being repeated in New Zealand media.
Well, what a phenomenal thing for you to say.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Good news in a bad way. and hip, you gotta keep it green.
The hip store on K Road is what you need. And food, and twine, books, clothes, vape supplies, and oil, and butter, drug tasting, aye brother. For the best in hemp, you gotta keep it green. The hemp store on K Road is what you need.
Experience the hemp store at 253 Karangahape Road. For nationwide delivery, visit hempstore.co.nz or call 0800 Hemp Store.
For the best in hemp, you gotta keep it green. The hemp store on K Road is what you need.
To see a world in a grain of coffee and a heaven in a perfect roast. Hold infinity in the mug in your hand and eternity in every gulp.
Atomic Coffee. Each bean is a world of its own, and when they are blended together expertly by the Atomic team, they create a divinely good coffee.
Atomic Coffee, available at The Roastery in Kingsland and three bustling espresso bars in central Auckland.
Or get your fix online at atomiccoffee.co.nz.
Ah, the environment. Without it, we are like a fish without water.
Or just a human without water.
A human without air?
We need both.
Well, in that case, it's good that EcoFest is coming this March. EcoFest is a huge array of amazing events and activities to appreciate and contribute to the environment in our beautiful city. Explore, discover, create, appreciate, and spark sustainability in your neighbourhood. EcoFest, March 15 till April 14. Discover what's on at ecofest.org.nz.
Beloved Scottish band Teenage Fan Club are heading to New Zealand. And we have tickets to give away. How do you get your sticky hands on them? Well, you need a B card. And to listen to 95BFM Drive all week for your cue to enter. Teenage Fan Club, Friday, March 15 at the Power Station. Get your tickets quick from frontiertouring.com.
Oh, it's your voicemail. I'm at the gig and I was thinking about you. I thought that you'd be here. Guess that you don't check the 95BFM entertainment guide. That's a shame. It's my last night in the city. I'm flying out in the morning, so guess I probably won't see you again.
There's someone in here!
Don't miss the moment. Check the 95BFM entertainment guide. It's gigs in there. Online at 95BFM.com and on air 7 days a week.
I don't know, and frankly, the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire, 95BFM's news and current affairs show. Last week, the Auckland War Memorial Museum announced it would be moving from what it called a colonial museum to a titiriti-centric approach. I spoke to Valerie Morse from Peace Action Wellington about their response to this and why this approach is necessary for museums in Aotearoa.
I think the museum is moving in the right direction. I think it is absolutely appropriate in 2024 for Auckland Museum to be moving towards being a Te Tiriti-centred museum and certainly shedding its settler colonial past.
For those who might not know, could you tell our listeners a bit about the settler colonial past and what the Auckland Museum has committed to address that?
Yeah, so I think it's important to understand that across the world, there are movements through the museum community, so museum professionals, really, who do curate exhibitions, who collect artifacts, to decolonize these institutions. And Auckland War Memorial Museum is absolutely one of those institutions that's born of the colonial state that was established essentially as a kind of a monument to fallen soldiers who served in imperialist wars. Like, this is not hyperbole. These are literally the facts of its history. And throughout that history, that has not really been an institution that has, I suppose, understood its role as part of a colonizing project, a way of projecting mythologies about peaceful race relations or the peaceful settlement of Aotearoa New Zealand. So I think moving away from a kind of settler colonial past where museums were places that sort of hoarded objects that belonged to cultures that weren't necessarily their own, oftentimes stolen objects, to a place which is what Auckland Museum is looking to do now, moving into a model where they're working much more collaboratively with communities. And that's all communities. So that's communities across Auckland and across Aotearoa and the Pacific that have relevance, you know, to the kind of overall mission of the museum, educating and informing people.
Why do you think it has taken so long for an approach like this to be introduced?
Well, I guess what I would say is there's been great people in Auckland Museum for quite some time. I've had a number of dealings with people in their library staff and with their collections in mounting exhibitions, I guess critical exhibitions about Anzac Day. And I feel like there are some really great people within the museum. But I also feel like, you know, there are very, very long and strong ties to its long-standing kind of approach. And you know, it can be difficult for institutions to move and to shift. So, you know, here in Wellington, we have had the artivist kind of action at Te Papa, where they've redacted the treaty, they've changed the words on the English language draft text of the treaty that was displayed at Te Papa. Now, this is not an artifact, this is just simply a display. But it kind of highlights the fact that, you know, these institutions, our museums, are the main vehicle for interpreting and telling stories about New Zealand and about Aotearoa. So it is really, really important that those institutions actually do have a bicultural approach. But as I said, I think that can be difficult for institutions. They tend to be very slow moving and pretty resistant to change.
Given the political climate at the moment, are you concerned that this move could be used as, I guess, a political tool?
I absolutely am concerned. I guess what I would say is nothing that the museum is doing should be controversial, right? We have a treaty in this country that allows Pākehā, that allows non-Māori to live here. That's what the treaty is about, is essentially a permission slip to live here legally on the lands we call New Zealand or Aotearoa, right? And so if we're kind of saying, oh, somehow that it's inappropriate to use Te Tiriti as a basis for that museum, we're basically saying, oh, actually, the basis of New Zealand's colonization and settlement has no real legitimacy. So I think it's important for people to understand in terms of that wider debate about Te Tiriti that without Te Tiriti, without the Te Tiriti o Waitangi, Pākehā and non-Māori who live here do so as an illegal occupation, just like any other illegal colonial occupation around the world. The treaty is the unique thing that gives us permission to be here. And without it, or with changes to it that are not consented to by Māori, we're on very, very shaky ground. And so for an institution like Auckland War Memorial Museum to make the steps that it's making, they're very common sense. They're very appropriate. And frankly, long overdue. I think Māori would say they are very long overdue. But they are going to be a political football because we've got a white supremacist government. We've got a government that is interested in politicizing long-standing conventions, I guess, and long-standing understanding about what the treaty means. So all in service of kind of, you know, consolidation of wealth and power. So that's where our concerns really lie, is that we need truth in our history, and our museum exhibitions need to be about factual representations of things that have happened in the past, not glamorized, mythologized stories about war.
And that was Valerie Morse from Peace Action Wellington on their response to Auckland Museum's new Te Tiriti-centric approach.
That was The Wire.
Ko ere te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nē te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero. Mai ki o mō tēnei rā, that's a wrap on the Monday Wire. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today.
Ni ra hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.